Welcome to the Lighter Side of the Dark Side. It's your weekly freak show here on Renegade Radio and iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, everywhere you listen to podcasts. I'm Dark Mark, the goth comedian. Fortunately, Hannah, I'm not sure what's going on with her. She's not on. She's not returning my texts or calls, but hopefully she's all right and we'll see her next week. Or hopefully we'll see her this week. Maybe she'll pop in. I don't know, but it's sad because I know that our guest has plenty of stories about the Sunset Strip Rainbow and all of that. Also, she's one of the top acoustic guitar players, according to Guitar Player magazine, and top 10 female guitarists from Guitar World magazine. And I've been listening to her all week, and you know what? They're right. She's one of the best guitar players in the world. It's Janet Robin.
Oh, thank you. I don't know about that. I mean, those lists are funny, you know, this... I'm not saying I don't appreciate being on them, but it is funny about the female guitar lists that are put out, you know, because when you're listening to a record, you don't really know if it's a male or a female playing, do you?
Right.
Right.
Are you saying some of the ladies on that list may not be playing?
No, of course they're playing. It's just that there seems to be some sort of need to make a male guitar list and a female guitar list.
Yeah, I was going to say, what do you think about? I was going to get to this down the line. What do you think about this?
Question, well, I've been asked that question a lot, and I mean, because there's this scarcity of, you know, there's much more now than there was when I was coming up, but you know, there's not a lot of women guitar players just in general, and then there's, you know, there's only a few that are big names, you know, like a Jimmy Page name or something like that, you know.
Right. Well, there's
really not that many, you know, and
Nita Strauss, there's
Jennifer Batten, you know, Orianthe, Nita Strauss, Jennifer Batten, you know, all these people. Actually, Jennifer Batten and I were about the same time we were coming up in LA. Those other two are youngsters, you know.
Right. Was there a beef between you and Jennifer Batten?
No beef at all. We actually She was in another band when I was in Precious Metal. She was in another band, and we both were playing this special, like, benefit show, big rock show in Mexico, in Acapulco. This is like 1987 or something like that. And she was in another band, and I was in another in Precious Metal, and it was like 30,000 people, you know. Right. And I saw her play, and she was doing all the tapping. I'm like, awesome, you know. I hadn't seen a woman play like Eddie Van Halen and that sort of stuff. And so that's when I came upon her. But yeah, you know, lists are just lists. I know so many great guitar players just in general that aren't on any list, you know, but you know, when you get some exposure like that, it helps, I guess, for, you know, quotes or whatever, but it always just comes down to, you know, are you dedicated to your, you know, instrument, and are you out there playing, you know, and doing it?
Right.
Because no one will know about you if you're just in your apartment playing, you know.
By the way, if you don't know Jennifer Batten, there's people listening or watching the show. She was a guitar player for Michael Jackson, and she's a very accomplished guitar player. I don't know what she's doing now, but she's...
Jennifer is, you know, after Michael Jackson, she went and played with Jeff Beck, and then... She's doing sort of a solo thing now, and we're friends, you know.
Yeah,
and
that's pretty great.
Yeah, we're friends, and I went to see her actually recently, just before this whole lockdown thing.
Right.
And she's doing like a solo thing. It's very cool. She has a screen behind her, and she's got some images going, and she's, you know, playing some compositions of her own and some unique arrangements of other songs. And, you know, she's great. She's touring around. She tours a lot in Europe. I tour a lot in Europe, but I'm doing something totally different than her because I'm doing singing and I play a lot of acoustic, especially when I'm solo. So we're totally different music, but yeah.
And you also have the String Revolution, which we're going to talk about.
Right. That's another project too.
Yeah.
Jennifer and I sat down and at that gig and, you know, had a glass of wine. And we were just talking about, you know, how old we are.
Stop it.
No, you know, just the scene and just how it's changed and everything.
You're just starting to preach.
You probably don't know this, but when she left, down the line, Michael Jackson started up his band again, and he wanted another female guitar player, and they called me.
Oh, and really?
I actually did audition for it, but I was in Lindsey Buckingham's band at the time, and we were on the road when I got the call back for a second audition, and I couldn't go. But Becky Barksdale got it, also another good guitar player, blues. Yeah. But in the end, she only went out for like a couple weeks because he had to come back for all these molestation trials. Yeah, and he canceled the tour. So,
well, I would too, but
the audition was the audition was just the solo from Beat It. That's it.
Oh, you, had
to, you had to just play that, you know.
If you have a vagina and you can play Beat It, then you're
right.
in.
Right.
That's interesting. And you have so many stories like this. I said on Facebook, I said about our friend, but you truly are the Forrest Gump of Hollywood. And you've crossed so many paths with so many people, and we're going to talk about it. Before we do, I just want to throw out our sponsors real quick. Audible, you're on the road a lot. I'm sure.
Yeah, I know Audible. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. If you go to audibletrial.com/DMS, you can get one free book and access to all of the Audible originals now. You don't just have to pick one. You can get them all. And the last Audible book I got, and I've been listening to it and really digging in, is the Rob Halford autobiography.
Oh,
on Audible. It's great.
Oh, that's cool. From Judas Priest.
From Judas Priest, yeah.
Oh, I'm sure he's got stories too.
Oh, he's got stories. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
That's a whole different perspective on the metal scene.
Yeah, same true.
But they've got all sorts of books on guitars and whatever you want. So, you know, you can get whatever book you want, bestsellers, nonfiction, fiction, and all access to all of the Audible originals. You can cancel the next day, but you should keep it because you get that Audible original access. We also have please support the restaurants. Our sponsors, Doomy's Home Cooking in Hollywood. You ever been to Doomy's Home Cooking in Hollywood?
No, what's that?
That is the best vegan food you've ever had.
Wow.
Vegan
and
comfort food. You're in great shape, so this will be a cheat day.
Well, thank you for that. But yeah, I need to work out more. It's been tough. But so do they deliver or you have to pick it up?
Well, you know, they deliver in a certain area, but are you in the Valley or in Hollywood?
No, I'm like near West Hollywood area.
Okay, 1253 Vine Street. They probably do deliver to you.
Cool.
But I went and had their chicken cordon bleu sandwich.
Not
better
chicken.
Than Popeyes. It's not real. It's
right.
All vegan.
Right.
You guys are genius.
Awesome.
Mad genius. Chicken parmesan, shrimp po' boys. They have their nachos. LA Weekly said the nachos were one of the 10 best nachos in LA. The only one without meat. The flautas are the biggest flautas I ever had. So,
sounds great.
1253 Vine Street, right in the corner of Fountain and Vine, where the M Bar used to be.
Yeah, I know where that is. Yep.
Yeah, and you get delivered, pick it up, support them and your local restaurants because you definitely want them to stick around. And just real quick, I'm just going to mention if you go to the description on your podcast catcher or on YouTube, you will get 20% off. And I'm going to post this on our social media as well. 20% off Hustler Hollywood or 20% off Spy Associates. So get a nice sexy gift or see who's spying on you, whatever you want. And to keep up with your energy, I'm drinking my favorite energy drink, Raise Energy.
All right.
You can't get this in the 7-Eleven. It's in gyms, GNCs. This is a new flavor. I haven't tried this out yet. This is Phantom Freeze. Good thing about this, zero calories.
Oh.
Zero sugar. Zero crash.
And lots of energy.
Yeah.
Great.
It's interesting.
I'll try it.
It's very Skittles type flavor. It's good. Okay. Enough of the corporate sponsorships. Now, Janet Robin, you were born here in LA.
I was. Yeah.
You're a native.
I'm a Valley gal. Valley girl. Yes. Born in LA. Born at UCLA, actually. My alma mater, although I only went there for like a quarter. And raised in the Valley, North Hollywood. That's where I grew up. My mom still lives in the same house.
And that's great. Interesting upbringing. And actually, you were at the right place at the right time. You grew up with brothers. We're a bit of a tomboy, from what I understand.
Yes, two older brothers. And I was closer to the middle brother, the younger one, because he was around more. And he's the one who introduced me to guitar. And My mom started taking a little acoustic guitar too. We all started taking from another place that doesn't exist anymore called Valley Arts Guitar.
You had quite a teacher.
Well, at Valley Arts, it was all acoustic. And then my brother, Steve, he wanted to play electric guitar. And my mom doesn't remember, but somebody gave her the name of Randy Rhodes, this great guitar teacher, young guy who taught out of his mother's music school. And then she found out that it was, you know, literally around the corner. I mean, like 3 minutes from my parents' house.
Right.
So she's like, oh, that's even better, you know? So my brother started going there, and then I was still at the other place playing acoustic. And then of course I'm like begging to take electric guitar lessons because I wanted to do exactly what he was doing. So
right.
I had to like borrow his guitar, you know, for a while when I started with Randy. So yeah, I moved over to Randy. He was teaching at a place called Musonia. That was the name of his mother's school.
Right.
And he was a young guy, and he was in Quiet Riot at the time, which was a local, local band. They were famous in LA, but they hadn't gotten big. They got big after.
Yeah, this is pre Come On, Feel the Noise and all that.
Yeah, but it was.
I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
But I planned to get this question out earlier.
Yeah, sure.
Mess things up. I always do this. Who were your favorite guitar players when you started playing guitar?
Well, again, you know, it's my brother's influence. My two brothers had to share a room, and I was next door, you know, so all I heard was, you know, Zeppelin and Deep Purple, you know, like all the time. I mean, we're talking 70s, right?
Right.
So,
Blackmore, Jimmy Page.
70s. Well, 77 was when I started playing electric. But I was nine years old. But I started at six on classical.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. At the other place, you know, I started on acoustic and classical folk guitar and finger picking and stuff. And then at nine, I moved over to Randy's lessons. And, you know, that's when I started hearing, prior to that, like maybe 8 years old, I started hearing all that stuff, you know, Zeppelin but I was also really into the Beatles. My mom had bought the Sgt. Pepper's record, and I became obsessed with that record. And still to this day, that's my favorite record. If somebody says, you know, because you can never really pick one favorite record, but
right.
If I had to, it would be that. But I was also, you know, listening to Heart and Zeppelin and the harder edged stuff on Black Sabbath and, you know, some Deep Purple. And yeah, I would just go in his room, and he had all these posters from, do you remember like Cream magazine? And old rock magazines, and I would look at all the posters. And of course, you know, Jimmy Page, I mean, he became my number one besides my guitar teacher, because every time I went to a lesson at Randy's, I was just like, I started bringing neighbors because I was like, dude, you got to come and see my guitar teacher. You know, he was so amazing. But yeah, Page, Clapton, Tony Iommi.
I thought I heard a Clapton influence.
Yeah. Hendrix, you know, I mean, that's a little earlier, but of course I knew who he was. And I listened to his stuff.
Right.
Until later that I got more involved in other kinds of guitar players.
Right. Yeah, kids, before the internet, what we used to do is we used to buy magazines at the supermarket and then cut out the pictures, and that was what we would look at. Now you can see them on YouTube, you can see them on your phone, but not then.
So, yeah, magazines.
Yes. So I was just curious because I thought I heard a Clapton influence, and I know you talked about Jimmy Page previously, but Randy Rhodes was what he was doing.
I had never seen anybody like that. I'd never seen anybody play the way he played.
This is pre Van Halen, or
it's around Van Halen. Actually, no, it's after Van Halen. So Van Halen had just gotten signed and came out with Running with the Devil and that record, but Quiet Riot and Van Halen were playing a club that doesn't exist anymore called the Starwood. That was around that time. And Yeah, I'd never seen anybody play like him. And I got a really early rock and roll, you know, introduction, I guess, to rock and roll, because my parents, just great, great, awesome liberal parents, took me to see Quiet Riot and my guitar teacher all the time. I mean, whenever I could go, and they had to chaperone me because I was underage, you know, me and my brother, they had to chaperone us. So,
oh, wow.
And I was just like looking at him like, oh my God, you know.
And he had did he have the rock star look then? Was he all, I mean.
Oh yeah, he was very skinny. He had the Bay City Rollers look, you know, the skinny with the jumpsuit sort of and the big shoes. It kind of feminine, you know, effeminate.
He was always kind of, I mean, he always had a bit of a feminine energy.
A little bit,
even,
yeah.
Even with the Ozzy years, which was good. It kind of actually counterbalanced Ozzy great.
You know, I mean, he wasn't gay. He's just, it was very sensitive and very humble.
Maybe androgynous is the word I'm looking for.
Maybe, yeah. You know, I just think he wasn't looking for any machismo validation, you know, like that wasn't what he was about, you know, and it was great. And I don't think I would be doing what I'm doing now had it not been for him, because you have to remember when I was growing up, yes, there was a lot of male guitar players, but really the only female guitar player that I could identify with was Nancy Wilson.
Right. Who you later got to work with.
Later. Yes. That's a whole other story. But yeah, I mean, I'd heard of the Runaways, but they were like underground. And I don't know. Joan Jett was not Joan Jett yet. You know, there was no Lita Ford. Right. Nobody. And I knew Bonnie Raitt was and Joni Mitchell, but they were great on acoustic. But I was more interested in like what was going on with the rock guitar players and are there any girls out there? And Nancy played both, you know, right. So, and there was a picture of her hanging in my brother.
Sure there was.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's funny because there's all this Gloria Steinem stuff coming out now because, you know, she's getting up there and there's a lot of movies about her now. And, mm-hmm. and she started Ms. Magazine and, you know, one of the magazines I bought was Ms. Magazine in like 1970, I don't know, nine or something. And it's right. because Ann and Nancy were on the front of Ms. Magazine. And I was like, oh my God, it's them. You know, it's,
wow,
it's the Heart Girls. And I just was like, if she can do it, I can do it. And then I had also encouragement from Randy, who was just like, could give a shit about me being a girl. He honestly didn't care. Right. About me being a girl, being young. It was just all about, you want to practice, you want to get good, you know, that's how you do it.
Well, you have a unique perspective. What was he like as a person? I mean, quiet. He's like a shooting star. He just took off and then.
Well, so he was very quiet, very quiet, very subtle, smoked like a fiend. Mm-hmm. His thing was smoking and Diet Coke, you know, and I was like, Diet Coke, he's like this big, you know.
Right.
And he was just very quiet. And, you know, the lessons would be like a lot of jams, you know. Of course, he would show me some technical things, but then he would, you know, play a rhythm thing and he'd say, okay, I want you to play this rhythm thing. And then I'm going to play some solo stuff. And then I'd be like, you know, when he was, you know, doing his crazy shit. And then he'd say, okay, I'm going to play the rhythm. And now I want you to do some of your own thing. And I was like, well, I can't sound like you. And he's like, no, I don't want you to sound like me. I want you to sound like you,
oh.
You know? And then we would go over certain techniques and basic stuff that, you know, you would have to know as a guitar player, but he was like that. And, you know, it was, I don't think he thought he was going to get the Ozzy gig. I mean, he wasn't looking for it. I think somebody told him about it and he went, you know, the story, like he went to the audition and he was just like warming up before the audition and Ozzy heard him in the other room and was like, I'm sorry. You already have the gig already, you know, just from warming up, you know?
Right.
So he got the gig and, you know, a substitute, went in his place, another student of his who I continued taking lessons from in high school. Oh. And then I got a call, you know, from my mom at school that there was a plane he was in and that it had crashed and that he died.
Mm, what's crushed you? And, but here's the thing. If, I mean, it's amazing that he's just, first off, it's amazing that you played rhythm guitar before Randy Rhoads.
Well, yeah, in the lesson, yeah.
It's also amazing that he was just warming up and he got the gig off of that. I remember listening to, I read a story, Steve Lukather from Toto was on that Lionel Richie song.
Oh, yeah.
And they said, how many takes did it take? No, he said zero.
Zero.
He said, I was just warming up and they taped it. And that's right.
Put it in. Yeah. Well, they're the same thing, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, and then if he didn't get the Ozzy gig, Quiet Riot was on the verge of blowing up. So he would have been a superstar from that.
Yeah. I mean, they were blowing up a bit in Japan. They'd gotten a Japanese record deal or something. And yeah, eventually something would have probably happened with that band. But, you know, in the end, he really wanted to, he was really getting into classical guitar. And I think, you know, he was only going to do one more record with Ozzy and he was going to leave and go back to UCLA and study classical guitar.
And the real question is, did Randy teach you any tricks that only he and you know and his other students?
Oh, no. I mean, at the time I thought there were tricks, but now everybody knows them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, at the time I was like, oh, I know some special things on the guitar, you know, but.
That only Randy Rhoads knows.
You know, it was just at the time. Right now, there's so many people that have studied all of his technique and there's films of him and you can see him. What I miss having is my cassettes that I sometimes brought to the lessons and I recorded them. Remember the big Radio Shack cassette? Right.
Yeah.
Things that, you know, had a little handle.
Yeah, the handle thing. Yeah.
Right. Like, and I would bring it and tape some stuff because I wanted to remember what we did and, you know, whatever. I don't know where those are. They're gone.
Fortune.
Yeah. There's some on YouTube from other students that saved them and they're up on YouTube and you can hear them talking and he's like, nah, you know, everybody's got to know how to play the blues. You know, that's where it starts from, the blues. And just by the way, you know, he was a really great blues guitar player. People don't think that.
I said that on another podcast. Because it's weird, because it seems to me the Ozzy stuff, which is the stuff I've heard that he's done, it's kind of takes the blues completely out of it, which was pretty radical at the time.
Well, you know.
I mean, there's a blues undercurrent there, I guess, but I mean.
Well, I think any artist, you know, you learn all like the basics, right? The foundations, and then you go and fucking mix it all together and do your own thing. I mean, he was heavily influenced by classical music, heavily, because his mother was like a classical piano teacher trained. She had like a master's degree and everything. So he grew up, you know, listening to all that. So he mixed that style into his, you know, guitar playing. But of course, if you want to play rock guitar, any kind of rock guitar, guess what? You have to know the blues.
Right.
You have to know basic rock licks. You have to know Johnny B. Goode. I mean, you have to know these things, you know, and these kinds of licks. And
which you learned from Randy Rhoads.
I learned from him. And one of my other projects I'm doing right now is I'm working on I can't really talk too much about it, but like old master recordings of blues records of some people that would know these artists and some people would have never heard of these people. And I'm experimenting playing over them and, you know, and I'm just listening and I'm like, oh my God, you know, of course, that's not a Chuck Berry riff. That's, you know, a Robert Johnson riff, you know,
Mississippi John Hurt.
Yeah. I'm working on a Mississippi John Hurt song too. Yeah. And the finger style that goes on with some of that stuff. I mean, it is all traced back to that. So you have to learn those techniques, those styles, and then you can mix it however you want. And that's what he did. I mean, he actually says that on one of the students' cassettes that is up on YouTube. I heard him saying it. And I remember clearly him saying that to me.
Right. And I mean, I say they took the blues out of it. Some of that was a reaction to, you know, he didn't want to play like Tony Iommi from Black Sabbath. He was a very good player. And watching him, probably more than any other guitarist I've ever seen, it's so effortless.
Oh, yeah. He's a prodigy. You know, there's that story where his guitar teacher went to his mom and said, I can't give him lessons anymore. He doesn't need me, you know. And that he was like 15 or something when that had happened. Right. He'd only taken a few lessons.
Well, when you were 15 or thereabouts, or even before then, you said in elementary school, you got your first professional gig.
It is.
Who signed the check?
Yes, John Travolta signed the check.
Yes, that's the most amazing story I've ever heard.
Well, I mean, you know, you grow up in LA. I mean, it's not that you're seeing Hollywood celebrities walk around everywhere, but you're bound to run into somebody or somebody who knows somebody or a family member of somebody of somebody. So the band I was in sixth grade was called Rocks. So I
R-O-X
think,
or R-O-X-X?
R-O-X-X, you know. Okay. And the singer of our band was John Travolta's nephew. You know, his mother was Ellen Travolta. She was an actress for a while.
She was in Charles in Charge, I think.
Right. She was in those shows. Yeah. And he did a little acting too, but he wanted to be a rock singer.
Yeah.
And yeah, we were quite a interesting band. We were like, you know, two black guys, me and then
John Travolta's nephew.
Yeah. And then this other kid on keyboards. Yeah, very, you know, progressive band.
How was the singing, John Travolta's nephew?
Oh, he was good. He was good. And he was like, I have pictures, you know, and he was like a showman, you know, like doing all with the, you know, microphone and the cable. And, you know, we had a blast. And so I guess he came to us and said, hey, my grandpa, this grandpa Travolta, right, is having a birthday party in the rec room of his apartment complex.
Yeah.
And they want us to play a few songs and my uncle will pay us. And I'm like, oh, cool. You know, all of us were like, wow, you know, and $100, you know, that was a lot of money. Right. So,
yeah, but it's not $100, but it was.
What's that?
It's not $100. That's the greatest part. It's that John Travolta in the Heights.
Right.
Of Saturday Night
Fever.
Yeah,
of course. Yeah. No, I was just saying, you know, like, wow, we're getting paid money to play music, you know, like, of course it was going to be exciting to meet him, but I was like, okay, that's my first, like, hey, maybe I could possibly, you know, make a living being a musician. We played the gig. We played the gig and he was super nice. And yeah, he was a huge star. You know, I was like, you know, it was just fresh off of Grease. I think.
Yeah, I've never met him, but everybody I know that has met him says great guy, just super nice,
super
down
nice
to earth, just a real guy, regular guy.
Yeah, yeah. So,
and you had to not only you must watch the movie Face Off and feel really weird because not only did John Travolta pay you, but you went on a date with Nicolas Cage.
Oh right. Wait, how did you hear that?
I've that been was researching. Another... It's been I'll be honest. I did not know Janet Robin until Monday, but I've been researching, and I'm a big fan. I've been listening, I've been streaming your stuff, and I'm just a big fan of guitar and what you've done, and I'm gonna even praise Precious Metal in a second, but you went on a date with how was the date with Nicolas Cage?
Well, I mean. We called it a date. I had a small period of time where I was acting in junior high, and I did this like pilot, TV pilot that it was the first acting job that Nicolas Cage had.
Oh, okay.
He was not Nicolas Cage. Well, he was, but he
Nicolas
had
Coppola.
Yes, actually changed his name for that show. But that was his first like pro gig. And we just hit it off, but he was like 18 or 17. He was 17 and I was 14.
Ah.
Okay. So the date consisted of going to the rap party. And I still can't believe my mom let me go on my own, but she did with him.
Nicolas Cage.
Yes. He came to our house in his convertible something, like super cool, like old Stingray Corvette thing. It was silver. Maybe it wasn't a Corvette. I don't know. It was a convertible. And I got in that car and we went to the rap party. We didn't kiss. We didn't do anything. Then he drove me home, you know?
Okay. that's probably
but he would remember that. He would absolutely remember that.
Oh, I'm sure he would.
And I played basically myself in this TV show. I was like a girl guitar player trying to get into a guy band, you know? And you can see that show if you really do even more heavily research.
I'm gonna heavily research that. I didn't see the show, but I'm looking forward to it because we're housebound. So that's what I want to see.
The best of times. It was really cheesy.
Best of times.
Yeah, it was just the most cheesiest thing ever. The guy who produced it, brilliant guy, but it just didn't work for this show. He was the creator and producer of Laugh-In, George Schlatter.
George Schlatter, yeah.
Yeah, and so he was the producer and director on this show.
Yeah, he's interesting. Like, I think Laugh-In, and I think he did, like, bloopers or something, and those were
the World's Funniest Videos or something like that.
He might have produced that, too, and he produced, like, for all those three successes, he produced, like, 300 horrible shows. Not yours. I'm sure yours is fantastic.
No, it was not very good. And
Janet Robin and Nicholas Coppola? Come on.
Well, yeah. I mean, I had never acted before. I got the job by accident. You know, they were looking for a band to be in the show. Right. And my band at the time, it might have been the band that David was in. I have to ask him. We auditioned.
David Cunningham.
We auditioned for it. And George, he ended up like he wanted to just take me, not the band. And suffice to say, they kicked me out of the band after that happened. But
even
whatever.
You can outplay them all, I'm sure.
I try to be loyal, but yeah, I mean, he just came up to me. He's like, I'm going to write a part for you. I like the guys, but we don't need them for this. I got a better idea now. I know what I'm going to, I was like, okay. That was like another lifetime ago.
Well, I'll tell you, ago. If that show worked, you probably wouldn't have gotten into Precious Metal, the band.
That's true. Yeah, I might have not completely continued on guitar either. That is true. I did continue in acting up until age 18. So from 14 to 18, I had an agent. I was on a couple of other little things, and I was studying acting. But at the same time, I got in a band. Yeah, in high school. Music and guitar was still a force of nature for me. And it was real. Not that acting isn't real. It's just you're playing something else. But when you're playing guitar, you're yourself, you know, and you're into it. So I was drawn more to that. And I answered an ad. It was in a newspaper that I don't think exists anymore, called The Recycler.
I remember.
And the ad was, for looking for lead guitar player for all female band, rock band. And I was like, oh, this sounds kind of cool, because I had already been in some little other bands with guys, and there was always a problem, always. Either I was too good and they were jealous, or they wanted to like date me or something, it was always an issue. And they were always older too. And then that was always like, I had to be careful. And my mom was like, who are you playing with? It was all this shit. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to try this all girl band thing.
Those men. And you plopped yourself right into a hurricane because you were right there, 80 Sunset Strip, glam metal scene.
Talking, 1984 was when I got in that band. I was a senior in high school. And our first public performance was at my high school lunchtime concert.
How was that?
I have pictures from that too. It was great. Yeah. It was really great. I was so excited to play. I actually was one of those people that liked high school. I was student body president and I liked it. I was very social and I was super excited to show everybody, my playing skills, and I was proud of the band. We had some really good songs. Everybody was playing, good players. We had good players in the band.
No, I remember the name. I think I heard a couple songs way, way back, but I was surprised listening to it. It's a little punkier than I thought.
Metal.
It's not as overproduced as some of the 80s glam bands.
Yeah, I mean, our 1990 record, our last record we did was a little bit more, bluesy, rocky. But prior to that, we're kind of doing like the glam thing and a little punky poppy. It was just, you know, the name I thought was clever, even though we weren't really like a metal band, you know, right. Like that kind of stuff. It was just, I thought it was a clever name for an all-girl band. 7 years of my life in that band.
Yeah. See, I think that's the, that may have been the Achilles heel, maybe. The name may have been like the real hardcore metal guys would reject it.
It was tough. Yeah. We had a hard time at radio. We had a hard time with press. They didn't know, well, they're not metal, but this name. And then it was already hard being an all-girl band. I mean, we had a lot against us. You know, we really tried to make it happen. We tried really hard.
You did make it happen. I mean, you last a lot longer than a lot of those bands.
Well, we got signed to 2 major deals. That was good, you know, yeah. And that was all a good experience and for me and in knowledge of the business. We did some, you know, great gigs, some big gigs, opening for some people. And then we had a good, decent following in pockets of the U.S. You know, it was my first time really going on the road. I mean, I dropped out of college. I left UCLA and I was like, this is now going to be my college, is going on the road. And, right. You know, going on the road with a bunch of older girls, you know, in the 80s. And I mean, I wouldn't call myself a nerd. I was always like kind of class clown and just chill and stuff. So I wasn't like, yes, drunk. And then, you know, be with all these guys. I was like, I got to practice my solo for the next song, you know? Right. So that was all very new to me.
To illustrate that this isn't, you guys weren't, you know, Firehouse or Slaughter or Warrant. Rodney Bingenheimer is the one that broke you. Like he
That's
liked
right.
that.
That kinda... is correct. He broke us on his radio show. Like he does a lot of all girl bands, you know?
Yeah.
He broke the Runaways, you know? Yeah. So he played us and we got a little following from that. We were really big in LA at one point, right. Lines around the block. I mean, and we were at the Roxy, like selling out, you know, selling out there, selling out the Whiskey, selling out a place that doesn't exist anymore, Club Lingerie. We were really big out here. Right. And thanks to Rodney. And then our demo got passed on to what K-Rock at the time had lunchtime demos or whatever. And so right. Rodney was at a strange time, like Sunday nights at 10 or something, you know. And this was like in the middle of the week at noon. And they played one of our songs, this guy. And, you know, one of the guys... A&R guys from Polygram Records was driving down the street and heard it, you know, on his radio, you know, and he was like, who's this band, you know, and called up the station and.
It's like something out of a movie.
It was totally like that. It's funny, my career, I've had all these very interesting, something out of a movie thing happen. Yeah,
there's more to come.
There's more. But,
I'm not
as famous as you may make me out to seem to be, you know. My mom thinks I'm famous, but yeah, I'm not. I didn't
have a Wikipedia page.
Well, yeah,
there metal is. Does not.
We got to do something about that. But yeah, no, you know, I'm not. I didn't become a huge rock star or a household name, but I do have all these very interesting, like, well, that happened, and then that could have, you know, blown up, and then that happened, that could have blown, you know. But that's life, right?
Well, I mean, you supported yourself as a musician.
I have, yes, yeah, yeah.
Your entire adult life. To
yeah,
me,
no, I don't.
Why you're struggling that trying to support themselves during
well, art. Yeah. I only point that out because I like to tell people that, you know, when it comes to being an artist, whatever it is you're doing, really, I mean, I found out, you know, later in my life, not too much later. That, you know, you have to be, your heart has to be into what you do. You really have to be dedicated and love what you do, whether you're gonna make a lot of money at it or you're not.
Right.
You know, and if you're not committed to your art and getting better at it and experimenting, and then you should just do another job, you know? And so I decided I dedicated my life to music no matter what would happen. And yes, it's worked out. And yes, in this way where I can pay my bills being a musician, and for that I am happy.
Right,
I'm happy.
But I have a unfortunately I was too young, but I really have this fascination with the '80s Sunset Strip scene.
Well,
I watch Decline of Western Civilization Part 2.
That's great.
And you know what's ironic about that?
Yeah.
Of all the unknown bands that they interview, the only one that made it was Vixen.
Right. Yeah, we weren't interviewed for that. We were interviewed for something else, but not that. Yeah, Vixen was sort of our nemesis, you know, at the time.
Was there beef? Was there Precious Metal Vixen beef?
You know, there was and there wasn't. You know, there was like supposed jealousy. But then when we actually met each other, everybody was like, hey, nice to meet you, know. You know, so and then I became friends with the bass player way later after Vixen broke up and right. Sheriff was her name. Yeah. And no, I mean, listen, they
were the men trying to get you to.
I think the industry was trying to do something for us, but we wanted to be more like the Runaways and they were trying to be more glamorous.
Right.
And we didn't want to do that. We wanted to be, not that they weren't good players, they were, but they had a certain, a little bit more sexy look thing. And we were sexy, but we weren't going for that. You know what I mean?
They and I haven't listened to Vixen in quite some time.
And I don't think they wrote their songs either.
Well, maybe we'll start the beef again, but
they wrote some of their songs, but I don't.
They seemed overproduced. Whereas you guys seemed more organic, and your singer Precious Metal has a really great bluesy voice.
Yeah. She's got a cool voice. No, I mean, I shouldn't say they didn't write all their songs. I think some of their hit, or they had one big hit. I don't think that they wrote that song. I could be totally wrong. I know that they're talented and they're really good players and they were really nice, but yeah, it broke them. And they got a lot of play in MTV. And of course, you know, there's a whole story for Precious Metal about our MTV video.
Well, I was going to bring it up, but since you brought it up.
It's a good segue. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, so, yeah, because you did a cover of the 70s song, Mr. Big Stuff.
Right.
Who do you think you are?
Right.
And somebody filmed a very special cameo for you that was never been seen.
Yes. Well, at the time, one of the execs at our label was friends with Donald Trump. And, you know, I mean, you're talking 1990, 1991. He was like a celebrity and, you know, he was a Democrat, you know, a liberal, you know, kind of.
Trust me, he still is.
I know he is. But yeah, you know, and the label thought it would be funny and cool if he would agree to play Mr. Big Stuff.
And honestly, that's a great idea. I mean, if you think Mr. Big Stuff, 1990, you're thinking of a fat cat who's a big rich guy, you think Donald Trump.
Yeah.
He was in Home Alone.
We're an all-girl band and we're like, it's kind of like our chance to stick it to those guys, you know, who, you know, I mean, we had often we would have people come up after some of our shows, like guys, hey, your boyfriend's playing behind the curtain. I'm like, no, you fucking,
really?
You just see me play or not, you know? I mean, we had all
Are
kinds
you serious?
Of You don't even want to know.
Well, I watched the Go-Go's documentary and I watched the Joan Jett documentary and they talk about the same thing. Like people were just aghast that women were playing guitar.
Some guys did not believe it. They thought we were, you know, lip syncing it, the instrument. And I'm like, how do you do that? You know,
don't women have hands? Fingers?
You know, after we got more street cred and we started selling out clubs, people were like, oh, those girls can really play. And hey, the lead guitar player was, you know, taught by Randy Rhoads. And after I did more, you know, interviews in magazines and word got around, that sort of stopped happening. But yeah, we had shit like that. Or we had people throwing tampon and maxi pads on the stage.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I've heard about that. That's,
you know,
ridiculous.
I mean, dildos, you know, people fucking throwing dildos.
What a waste of a dildo.
I don't know, you know, Hollywood.
So speaking of misogyny, so Donald Trump's supposed to be in your video.
Yeah, we fly up to New York City, we shoot the video, you know, we took some press photos, of which I have still, and he is a little, you know, handsy on me and kind of does a side boob thing, you know. He's like, oh, you got a tight body there, you know. And I'm like, oh my god. It was very you know, disrespectful. And I'm like, okay, let's just shoot the video, you know.
Right. Because he's such an expert on fitness.
Yeah, right. We shot the video. He was really funny in it. He was a good sport.
Yeah.
And then it, you know, it got all edited and there was a big setup with MTV. It was really, really going to be our, mm-hmm. it was going to be our time to break out. Like this was it. We had a great record. We had written a song with Ann and Nancy Wilson. We had the guys from Cheap Trick that played on one of our songs. You know, we had this Donald Trump thing, you know, in this video. And we really, we had everything set, you know, and Capitol was on board. And then, you know, just like a few weeks before we're going to release it to MTV Headbangers Ball. Yeah. He called the label and said, I want, you know, $250,000 more.
More.
More. Yeah. Because the first amount, I don't know what that was. They paid him. He said he was going to give to charity. But then he decided he wanted more money for himself. Or we can't release it.
So I've heard 10,000 was the initial figure, which kind of makes sense. But yeah, so I don't know how you get away with that. I mean,
I don't know. You know, there was also on the side, there was some other, you know, things going on between the guy from the label and Donald Trump. They had some other business dealings that went wrong. I think we got caught in the middle of it all.
Sounds like
us as a pawn to like get back at the guy and just, you know, the label's like, no, we're not, you know, we're not going to pay you. So we had to reshoot the video with the double, you know.
Although he had the wig on and the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, it just wasn't, it didn't come out. It's cool, you know, so.
Right.
MTV played it a few times. And then, you know, we toured a little bit, but you're talking 1991, Nirvana and Pearl Jam, just the grunge thing started and we got dropped.
Ironically enough, a lot of women bands that got on the radio, but you guys got dropped because you were lumped in as glam metal. But it's funny that Donald Trump should be impulsive when a deal of his that nobody knows about that doesn't go down. But the 80s Sunset Strip, was it as wild as they keep saying?
Yes. Yes, it was.
Were you hanging out with Motley Crue and Guns N' Roses and all those guys?
Well, I did hang out more with Guns N' Roses. Yes, we hung out a lot with
Poison and
no bass player.
Duff McKagan.
Duff, yeah, we went to a lot of parties with him. He was friends with our drummer, and he would come out all the time with us. And I did go to a party where Axl was there, but you know they were all doing like heroin, and I was like. I that's where I cut it off for me. Like I'm happy to, you know, do other kinds of things, but I didn't want to do that. So, but yeah, we became closer to like I spent more time with CeCe DeVille.
How was that?
Poison. He's crazy, but crazy
fun. That's what I've heard. And it's unfortunate that Hannah's not on because she has from being at the Rainbow CeCe DeVille stories, but,
He's awesome. And he was so nice and we had so much fun and he was so respectful to me, to our band. He knew how hard we worked. We opened for them once at a big like LA concert, downtown concert thing. And he was just awesome, you know, and we wrote a couple songs with him and we played with them a few times. But I mean, the thing about the Sunset Strip was that back then in the 80s is that there was real camaraderie as much as you hear about competition. Sure. But on the other hand, there was camaraderie too. You would see everybody at the clubs. You would go out to the Rainbow afterwards. You know, people were handing out flyers, right? This is before the internet and everything. Right. So you'd walk down the street, hand out flyers, or you'd put up post bills all over Laurel Canyon and, you know, people would come by, residents, take that off, you know, we're going to call the police, you know.
But people would see them and come to the shows, unlike today where you,
100
people say they're coming on Facebook and 20 people come.
Yeah, no, I mean, we had lines, you know, it was fun. The clubs were fun, you know.
Yeah.
We often would book the night out with bands we knew, you know, so we'd have like a party, you know, together. Right. Yeah, always a party afterwards too, you know, so.
Yeah.
It was real camaraderie, you know, and that was, I miss that now. We don't have any scene here.
And Precious Metal, I would imagine, would have male and female groupies.
We have both, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, both.
You probably, some of the women that the guys were trying to get were like, no.
And well, we, Well, we had, we had some gay women. We had straight women too that thought we were just badass cool, you know? And then we had like normal guys just that really liked us, that rock and roll, like liked what we did. And then we had like really weird, and every girl musician will tell you this, really weird, strange male groupies, like strange people. Not that they were going to do anything to us. Just there was something really like, they probably have like our pictures all over their room, you know, and something like,
he's a couple of degrees away from a serial
slightly player. Creepy. Slightly
creepy is a good word. How did Ann and Nancy Wilson get to collaborate with you, and what a dream come true for you.
That's why I brought up that thing about the magazine, the Ms. magazine and them on the cover. When we were having meetings with the label of, you know, how can we give more power to this band and help break this band and break this record? And they were like, would you like to write with another band that has a bigger name than you guys? Because we were very prideful in writing our own songs, but they were like, look, would you be open to that? And we were like, sure. And they're like, well, who would you want to write with? And I'm like, Ann and Nancy Wilson. You know, I mean, you know, that's like they're yelling out other people too. But then when I yelled out their names, the girls were like, yeah, that would be great. The girls from Heart. And they were on Capitol too. So our A&R guy knew them and their manager, and knew also their ghostwriter. You know, they have a third writer, Sue Ennis, who's not in the band, but wrote a lot of songs with them. And he called her right up, and, you know, we met in LA because they were out here at one point. We met them, just to see the vibe, and it was a great vibe. They were so cool. And then we set up a time, and me and the singer flew up to Seattle, and we wrote two songs right there, you know, at Nancy's house, you know, and they had some ideas. We finished them with some music stuff and lyrics, and, you know, I spent the whole weekend. I slept there. You know, I spent the night there.
Just kicking yourself like, I'm playing guitar with Nancy Wilson, or
I'm on
their level.
You know, so part of me was like, oh my God, you know, I was that, you know, what, like I was that 9-year-old girl looking at their, you know, poster in my brother's room. And now I'm at her house writing a song. I was really serious back then because I felt like this was our last chance to make Precious Metal happen. And in fact, it was. And I was just like, you know, I did try to think of myself as being on their level because we have a job to do. We have to finish the song. It's got to be a good song, you know. And then, you know, of course, we wanted her to play on it and sing backgrounds. Nancy especially. Not that we didn't like Ann, but we had kind of a thing with Nancy, you know, and there was a good connection. And so she did end up flying back out to LA at the studio. We were doing our record and she played on part of the song and then sang backgrounds. But of course, when I was there and, you know, we're smoking and drinking and dancing, you know, after we were done working on the songs.
Yeah,
it was great. I was like, you know, a testament to, like I said, your hard work, your dedication, and a testament to, like I said, your commitment to your art. Right. So, you know, these various artists like Ann and Nancy influenced me. I stuck with this career. And, you know, if you work hard and you get good and good, you're bound to run into some of your idols. You're just bound to do that, you know, upon looking, you know, at the perspective that I have now, I can see why that happened.
And just as on a side note, men or women, gender, whatever, if Barracuda isn't one of the top 20 guitar riffs of all time,
come on. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, come on.
I mean, granted, you know, it's Roger that's playing that riff, but crazy on you.
That's another one.
Okay. And that amazing finger picking thing that Nancy does at the beginning, and she's just doing this, you know, and I'm like, and she's rocking it, you know. That's the other thing. Like, I loved Joni Mitchell and Bonnie Raitt and some of these other people, but Nancy Wilson was on stage, you know, full rock regalia, you know, doing the rock moves like all the guys, and I was like, that's what I want to do. You
know? Well, so of course I pick out the one riff that is not, that Nancy did not play, but,
they wrote those songs. They wrote those songs, you know, it wasn't the guys in the band. It was the girls.
And Cheap Trick was on Capitol.
His last name. What?
Tom Peterson.
Tom Peterson. Yes, he played bass on one of our tracks,
and we're
nice guy.
Yeah, we're almost an hour in, and we've only scratched the surface.
I hope they're not bored by now.
I know I'm not.
Okay.
Because I was just going to get to you. Grunge happens, and you saw this big scene that was just, I mean, it was a cultural, you know, people
have
tend to dismiss it, you know, the Smarty Pants Rock Critics or whatever, but it was a cultural movement.
It was.
And like all of it, the best music was, you know.
From Seattle.
I'm saying glam metal in the 80s.
Oh, glam metal in the 80s. Yes.
People dismiss all of it, but some of it's really good. And, you know, towards the end, you had the copies. Same thing happened with grunge.
Right, same thing, yeah.
So
it happens with every movement, though, like that, doesn't it, kind of?
Punk, rap, it happens with everything. Oh. So, but you, you formed another band with the lead singer, Precious Metal. Were you guys trying to go grunge, or?
No, we were trying to do more pop rock, you know? Right. Totally different, kind of groovy pop rock, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. A little psychedelic pop thing, and... You know, I didn't know what was happening with my life. Honestly, I was in a little depression.
Well, you were in your early 20s.
Yeah, 20.
You had lived your dream.
24, something like that. 23.
You had lived your dream, and now what next?
Right. I was trying to make something happen with Leslie from Precious Metal. And at the same time, I thought, all right, well, you know, I can play guitar. Maybe I can play guitar in other people's bands and get paid for it. So a la the side player, you know, I'd never really done that before because I was always in bands, but I knew people who did that. And I was like, well, I'm going to see if I can, you know, prostitute myself out to other bands.
Is that what it is?
It's not.
I don't think it is. It isn't.
No. There's a joke that people say, you know, you're a music whore, you know. No. It's a great, you know, it's very respected to get these gigs, of course.
Like you were saying before, you never know who's playing on these records.
It's true.
That's true. Kiss didn't play on their records.
The Beach Boys, they didn't play on the records.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they didn't play on Pet Sounds. It's the whole other band with Carole Kaye.
The Monkees. Today is just, I mean, like, you know, like I say, there's all these session guys that just, and girls.
Yeah, no, I wanted to try to move into that direction if something didn't happen with the band with Leslie. Session work, or maybe I could get hired to, you know, sideman work and whatever.
And you did
I just got a call out of the blue. It wasn't out of the blue. It was somebody who used to work at the label we were on, was working for this other lady who was in charge of putting people in bands, like in big bands, celebrities bands. She was like an agent kind of thing, a music band agent.
I gotta get that music job. Band That's member a good job. Agent.
Yeah, and so it was a specific. I'd gone out on a couple of other auditions. A few other things that, you know, it didn't work out for whatever reason, but then she got another call from Lindsey Buckingham's people, and he wanted specifically two women in his band.
Right.
So, and yeah.
Lindsey Buckingham from Fleetwood Mac, famously doing a solo thing at that time. And I want to ask you as a guitar player, your expert opinion, is Lindsey Buckingham maybe the most underrated guitar player of all time?
I would absolutely say, yeah. I don't know about the most underrated, but I mean, he doesn't think of himself that way, but I think, yeah, like talking about those lists, going back to the beginning of your podcast of, you know, the world's greatest guitar player or whatever. Yeah. I mean, he's rarely on those lists. That's why they are what they are. But, you know, he gets overlooked because he's also an amazing songwriter, an amazing singer, an amazing, you know, producer and arranger, and an amazing performer.
It's just, you listen to these songs and you've heard these songs your whole life, but like, I remember my ex-girlfriend was a big Fleetwood Mac fan. And we were listening to Gypsy.
Yep.
And at the end of that song, he does like this really intricate finger picking thing. And I never noticed it before. I'm like, is that a guitar? They're like, yeah, that's a guitar.
Yeah, he's unusual, you know, in his picking style. He doesn't use a pick for most of the time. He plays with the fingers. And yeah. And then, so we don't have enough time, you know, on your podcast to go into all of these things. But that was a whole other, I felt like when I got that gig, you know, I was out of college already, and now I'm getting my master's degree, you know, and like as an analogy, you know what I mean? Right. Precious Metal was the college thing, and now I got to step it up, you know?
Right. So, you know, he keeps floating in and out of Fleetwood Mac. And by the way, I don't know if you're in touch with him. Is he okay?
Yeah, he's actually, he's doing a streaming show tomorrow, 6 p.m.
Okay, great. From his home studio.
And yeah, I saw him in February, right before this whole thing happened.
He had open heart surgery.
He's good. He's so much better. He said he's doing fine. His voice is back. I heard him rehearsing. We were at the same rehearsal place, and you know, he's like, I walked in and they're playing, and I'm like, you know, he sounded great. Mm-hmm. He looks strong. He looks good. You know, I mean, he's 70 years old.
That's great. Know?
He's still going strong. And
yeah.
That's another gig. That's another situation that changed my life for sure.
And,
you know, and I always make sure when I see him,
he's attached.
I try to remind him of that.
He's attached.
Yeah. He's a taskmaster. Yeah. I mean, there was a lot that I learned in that gig, and I don't know how long you want to go, but it goes on and on.
I can talk to you forever. So it's just as long as you want.
Well, I mean, you know, I had to grow up in that gig, and because it was not the Precious Metal that we were professional. We were, but this was another level of professionalism.
Right.
And, you know, I was hired, right, for a job. I wasn't like, in his band, you know, I was in his band, but we were all hired, you know, so I'd never really had that experience before. So my practice techniques and everything I knew about was just from Randy and from being in Precious Metal. This was at another level. And yeah, he got a couple of wake up calls. You know, he came to me once and said, you know, you're, timing is off in this song. Your guitar timing is not good in that song. You're singing out of key on this background on this song. And then, you know, and I'm looking at him and he's like, you know, you have to fix all that. You got to get it together. Cause if you don't, I'm going to have to replace you. Like, it was just like that. Like, the words came out like that. And I was like, yeah, okay, no problem. You know? And then like, I just, my whole world changed. You know, I started going back to guitar lessons. I started singing lessons. I started taping everything, you know, using a metronome. I mean, see, these are great things that happen for artists, because you can never like rest on your laurels.
Right. There are no after everybody telling laurels. You what a great guitar player you are, and you are, but this is another skill set.
I mean, you can always get better. You know, if you're still breathing and able to play, you should always try to get better and you should always experiment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I learned a lot from that. And I worked really hard and I played with some of the other people in the band. And, you know, we rehearsed together alone separately because I wasn't the only one he came to. He did code to a couple of other members too. You know, he was secretly taping all of us on separate tracks. And then at the end of rehearsals, he would listen to everybody's track.
Wow. That's
That's how you get
a couple things.
That's how you fucking get good. And that's how he did his records. And I'm sure they were doing all kinds of blow and cocaine and everything for fun at times, but they were doing it to stay up all night to get one good take.
Right.
You know?
And when you got hired 2 weeks later, it was this guitar, it's a very intricate guitar piece, guitar and vocals, with four guitars on The Tonight Show.
Right. Yeah. So we had 2 weeks to get our shit together.
Right.
And, you know, we were going to play two songs. We were like, you're going on The Tonight Show in two weeks. And I'm like, oh my God, you know? And so we're like manically practice. And it was a job, you know?
Right.
The hours were like musician hours, 11 to six.
Sure. You know,
all day long.
Hours, yeah.
Yeah. You know,
so, here's the thing. I don't know if you, how long ago you've seen that clip. I saw it today. There is a part where he looks at you and smiles.
Yeah. I think from the get go, we had an energy together. Yeah. And, I think he liked me in some way.
Oh, really?
But, you know, he knew I was already in a relationship with a woman at the time. And, you know, I told him, and, listen, you know, you don't get romantically involved with your boss, you know.
He does.
I loved him. I mean, I loved him like a mentor. What he became. He became that to me. And he saw how committed I was and that I rose to the occasion and got my shit together. And I always tell everybody, he's the reason that gig and him is the reason I'm on anxiety medication now. You know, because it gave me so much anxiety, you know, and double check and check and double check and do the track again. And, you know, wow. But yeah, you know, we had a connection on stage, especially, and it grew. So in our performances on the road, we would do a lot of things together, and we would end up like playing guitar battle, you know, with the guitar necks, kind of doing that thing. Yeah. You know, I am a performer. I'm definitely a performer.
That showed on the tape. You just froze.
Such a great band. Everybody in the band. Oh, sorry.
No, that's okay.
How's
you're back.
Better?
It shows on the YouTube. Yeah, you're back.
Yeah.
It shows on the YouTube clip because you're really, I understand how intricate the guitar pieces are. And there are a couple times where you stop grooving and make sure you got.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, and you have to remember too, this was a different position for me. So it's not a band and I'm not the focus. He's the focus. Yeah.
But
so
you still made yourself the focus a bit.
I tried to be careful about that, but he is was not intimidated by me or anything, you know, like he did let me be myself, but I still had a job to do. And I would, you know, make sure I was doing that job. But yeah, we had a lot of fun on stage. And I think everybody in the band, you know, appreciated our energy, and they got on board as well. We all became a real family. You know, it was a real family for him and for us. And it was one of the greatest experiences of my life. Absolutely changed me. I'm still friends with many of those guys from the band. Certainly Lisa, the other girl, who, by the way, was the first bass player in Vixen.
Ah, well, here's another question I have for you, in the 90s. And I know we're running out of time. Anytime you want to say, let's cut it off. And,
all right, I'm good. Yeah.
In the 90s, the grunge era, it seemed like every band had a female bass player.
Right. Yeah. Like Smash.
Did they ever try to recruit you?
No, I mean, I don't play bass, you know, so no, every band. Yeah. There was a thing.
Like Zombie, Smashing Pumpkins.
Right. They were like trying to do that, but I don't play bass and I'm not a bass player. I mean, I can play bass and I'm playing bass on a new recording I'm working on, but I'm not a bass player. And I wouldn't want to do that on stage. So
I thought maybe a record company was like, hey, we got a bass slot over here for you.
No, mm-mm. No. Any calls I got called for would be guitar playing gigs. So, yeah.
I hope you come back for part two, because I have one more question, and I'm going to talk about what you're doing now.
Sure.
And your solo records and your string revolution. Did I get that right?
Yes, you did.
Okay. I also said guitar revolution, the string revolution.
Yeah, the string revolution, yeah.
Now, this, you know, the Wild Sunset Strip days probably primed you for this gig, but you became the touring guitar player for Air Supply.
Yes. Great guys. Awesome.
Please tell me, please, that they're wild, that they're that there's all sorts of crazy stuff and debauchery on the road to Air Supply. Please tell me.
I'm not going to tell you that. Well, look, they do like to have a good time.
Really?
They, you know, back then, that was quite a few years back, you know, I think they both had wives or girlfriends.
Okay.
So, but yeah, we always went out and partied after every gig, you know.
Wow.
Yeah. Drinking, you know.
Well, they are
drugs. You know, everybody's too old to do drugs now. So there's no drugs, you know, but yeah, they like to talk to the ladies and, you know, drink and whatever. Again, I'm still the same person on the road. Like I can have like one or two glasses of wine and then where's Janet? Oh, she's back in her hotel room sleeping.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just, yeah. Practicing or sleeping, you know, it's like, I don't have that in my thing. I don't know why, but yeah.
So Air Supply can out-party you.
Totally. They can totally out-party me. And yeah. I mean, and some of the guys in the band too, I was also the only girl in that band. And I remember they would knock on my door, like if we had a day off, hey, we're going to go out on the town tonight, you know, come on, you know? And I'm like, you know, I'm just going to stay in my room tonight and order like Thai food. You know, I mean, I don't know. I think by then I was just real kind of, you know, over that.
And you know, I'm a frustrated guitar player. I took lessons and I failed miserably, but, and you know, everybody
you take lessons from me.
Well, yeah, that we might arrange that. I'd have to get a guitar, but
yeah.
I took lessons when I was 17 and I failed miserably, but you know, and then all my other friends were like, look, I can play Crazy Train. Like that's everybody's first lick that they know
they
learned, and I never learned it. But how difficult is it to play Air Supply's music?
It's not difficult. You know, they're pop songs, you know, soft pop songs. And you know, the gig went like this. They saw me playing at another gig that I was hired for, like a 70s, like, you know, a night of 70s music. And they're like, we want her in the band. They hadn't had a lead guitar player. They were using tape. They're using tapes.
Oh, wow.
For the lead guitar parts. And I thought, oh, they're that's great. They're cool about having a girl in the band. You know, okay. I met them that night. They were the nicest guys ever. Mm-hmm. And it went like that. I got the job like then. And then like about a month later, they sent me a CD. Here's our set. Learn that. And then we're playing at the Grove.
Right.
You know, I'm like, no rehearsal, you know, because they are so set in their show. You know, they have a specific show that runs a certain way. So I learned everything on, you know, on the CD. You know, I tried to print out music wherever I could. But I mean, and then for the solos, they were like, do whatever you want. I was like, okay.
I was going to ask.
Yeah. I was like, okay, that's great. That's like guitar player's dream. So yeah. And then, you know, the first gig was at the Grove in Orange County, Anaheim, right, or wherever that is. Yeah.
Anaheim. Yeah.
Yeah. That was it. We had a sound check.
Yeah.
And then.
But you didn't, you didn't shred. You just made sure the solos fit the music.
They, you know, there was a couple of parts where I do shred and they were like, Janet, you got to come out. You got to come with Russell, come in front. Yeah, everything's orchestrated and set. You know, I had an area that I was to stay in,
right?
You know, because it is about Russell and Graham.
Yeah.
But they're like, yeah, for this solo, you know, this part, we want you to come out and stand next to Russell and do your thing. And it was, you know, interesting, like, reaction from the audience because they have like a huge female following.
Yes, like, I'm aware.
Yeah, I mean the ladies just absolutely love them, and the guys are there because their wives are there. I mean they're kind of into it, but it's all about the ladies. And
yeah,
here I come along, you know, and I'm playing this guitar and I'm doing my thing, and they're looking at me. So a couple looks were like, "Who the fuck is that?" You know,
right.
Why is there a girl in the band? You know, and then the other looks were like, wow, that's cool. That's a girl playing in Air Supply. You know, it doesn't really matter whether it's a girl or a guy, but you know, so
back
I got
on the 1980s Sunset Strip and
you know, I got both.
Girl could play guitar.
Yes. But they were so nice. The fans were so nice. And the guys, Russell and Graham would like all of the band to come out after the show and do the meet and greet, not just them.
Right.
So they always included us, and a lot of people came up to me. They were really nice. But yeah, I could see a couple of the women. you know.
Oh, get jealous.
Yeah. And I'm like, you don't even know the half of it. So, don't you worry, honey. You know.
Because I'd honestly be lying to say I was an Air Supply fan. However, I will say I was somewhere and I must have been in a waiting room or something and Lost in Love came on.
I love that song.
Well, I was listening to it. I was like, yeah. You know, it's really well produced.
It's a really good song, really well produced. I would say in the whole show that we did, that was my favorite song. I always loved when that song came on. Right. But yeah, you know, to move this along, the gig got to be too much. They work like 365 days a year. Right. And, you know, that's great. But I really was in the midst of doing my solo stuff. I had the opportunity to work with John Carter Cash, Johnny's son.
Now you were singing now.
Yeah. So yes, I was singing. I had been singing and released a few CDs before I got the Air Supply gig, before the Meredith Brooks gig. I mean, mm-hmm. I had already been doing that after the Lindsay gig ended. That's when I started getting more serious about doing my own stuff. And Lindsay was like very encouraging. You know, he was like, send me your demos. And, you know, he would give me a few things. I don't know. I wouldn't write that lyric. You know, I mean, he's very blunt. You know, you don't sound good on this one. I mean, you know, so he would give me a few of his critiques on things. Right. And, you know, I started playing clubs around town. I started doing the acoustic thing and the band thing. I wanted to incorporate both. Mm-hmm. And my music taste had expanded, especially since after playing with Lindsay.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, you know, cut to, you know, the gig with Air Supply, I just couldn't do it anymore. You know, I never thought that I would ever quit a paying gig, but I really was like, I want to make this record. This is a great opportunity to work with John at Cash Cabin. And I was just like,
how did you meet Johnny Cash and June Carter Cash's son?
I need to get a glass of wine now.
You forever, I hope we do a part two because there's a lot more I want to get into.
Yeah, sure.
So how do you meet the John Carter Cash?
Well, you know, it's another one of those things. It's like I was watching Walk the Line for like the second time, and I was getting ready to do my next record, and I had a bunch of songs and demoed, and I was watching this movie, and I just was like, did they ever have a child together? Because in the movie they talk about their own children from their other marriages.
Right.
And so I looked it up and lo and behold, they did. One, John Carter Cash, who was around my age and into like, he was a producer and he was like into hard rock, grew up on metal, you know, right. And now he's producing singer songwriters. And I'm like, oh my God, like this is my guy, you know, like this is exactly where I come from, you know, and what I'm doing now.
So weird. All these, yeah.
Yeah,
all these country offsprings start going out like Shooter Jimmy.
They like to rebel. Like to rebel against, you know, what they were brought up with, you know. But it's, so I sent him a message. I remember MySpace, right? MySpace.
Oh, I remember fondly.
Yeah, I sent him a message saying who I was, telling him some of my credits, gave him my website, and I said I'm interested in you producing me, you know, for this next record. And, you know, he called, he sent me an email and then he said, I want to talk to you, you know, and so we spoke and he's like, I'm like, I don't have any money. And he's like, well, you have to pay, you know? And I'm like, well, how much is it? You know? And he's like, well, it's going to be at least 10 grand to start out with. And then it may go over, you know, and then of course you'll need money on your own to print up the CDs and all that stuff. And I'm like, I don't have that money. He's like, figure it out. Another lesson, you know? So this is way before Kickstarter.
Right.
And well, they were trying to, I sort of heard of Kickstarter, but it wasn't like nobody was doing it. And the only thing I heard about was this singer songwriter, Jill Sobule, who's amazing.
Yeah.
She's awesome. I read an article about her that she raised money through PayPal, you know, donations from her fans to do her next record. I'm like, I'm going to do that. That's what I did. I raised nearly $19,000.
That's great.
You know, on that first record. And I couldn't believe it. I mean, I was like, oh my God, you know, people were sending, you know, of course I was sending them back things and I was offering house concerts or guitar lessons or signed by John Carter Cash or whatever stuff, you know, and I, you know, raise the money. And, you know, he's like, I knew you could do it, Janet. You know, look, he doesn't need the money, but he needs to be paid. You know, I'm using his engineer who also ended up producing my second record. I'm using his studio, and also I needed money to pay the musicians because I didn't use LA musicians. I also had to fly to Nashville and stay there.
Right.
And, you know, pay for that and then pay for musicians in Nashville. It was all very expensive. All my gear got shipped there. I mean, it was a whole thing. Right. And I did it twice.
Did you make your money back?
No, not yet.
Now, what was it like recording in the cash cabin or the
cabin? Yeah, it was great. You know, I loved being outside of LA.
Did you feel the ghost? Did you feel the...
I felt the energy of a home, you know. Mm-hmm. It was very homey, pictures of his family everywhere. It used to be his old hunting cabin, and they turned it into a recording studio. But on the backside, the facade of the log cabin is still there, and it's very... Yeah, it's just great, you know, and they're different there. They work at a different pace. There's not all this, you know, and it's cocaine not all about out there. What's that?
The cocaine's not as strong out there.
Yeah, no, nobody's doing that. You know, they're just trying to get the best performances. I know you are, but they're very encouraging, you know, and, you know, they were great to work with, and we just got along. I mean, they just, you know, they didn't know who I was. I mean, they read my credits, but I wasn't like Loretta Lynn trying to go there and, you know, because that's a private studio. You can't just book it, you know, right. You have to go through them. And so that was a great experience. And yeah, I mean, I don't know when I'll make all my, well, you know, that money was donations, and I, you know, made some of it back on,
well, yeah,
but not all of it, you know,
closing and
yeah, stores were closing. People were moving on to MP3s and streaming and stuff. And, you know, I did sell a good amount of CDs in Europe on the road, but mostly at my live shows, you know, nobody's buying CDs in stores. So yeah, it was a tough time. And now nobody buys CDs.
Right. Although I was able to listen to your catalog on Deezer, and I was very impressed. Does everybody really fall in love with in Prague?
Well, you know, I think it was more like fall in love with Prague.
Oh, with Prague. Oh, okay. I thought it was.
No, it's not. It is the title that you said, but I think the way I was thinking of it when I wrote it was everybody falls in love with Prague, but I didn't think that sounded good singing. I thought everybody falls in love in Prague sounded much more romantic. Prague, you know, I got my start touring in Europe in Prague, in the Czech Republic. It's a whole other story through a band, friend's band that was, you know, lives out there and put a tour together for me the first time in Europe. And, you know, I just kept going back there. I still go back there.
You froze again.
Into yet, except for maybe Dubrovnik. It was not bombed in the war. So everything's still there. All the buildings, well, all the great. Gothic. You as a Gothic guy would appreciate it.
I can't wait. Yeah,
very Gothic. There's fucking bats flying around.
Oh, I mean, I love it.
It's, you know, it's so like cobblestone streaks, dark, you know, lamps, you know, flickering and all that shit.
Oh, I got to go. I'm going to book a ticket right now.
You got to go. You know, you walk down into like these bunkers and caves. That's where the bars are.
Yeah, I've seen it. It sounds like a great time.
Super cool. Yeah.
Right. You know, I want to have you back because there's so much stuff I barely scratched the surface on. But I was listening to the String Revolution and loving guitar as I do. I found it really amazing. Now there's no drums on this. Everything's on guitar.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, occasionally on some of the recordings, we might have, you know, added like a cajon on some sections, but for the most part, everything is, you're hearing a drum, it's one of us banging on the guitar,
right,
close mic'd. Yeah. And then basses are either a bass or our baritone, right, guitar. And that whole idea was inspired by Lindsay's, you know, guitar orchestra, except I wanted to do something instrumental and really focus on the guitar. I put an ad in Craigslist.
Right. I did too for something else.
On purpose. You know, I know tons of great musicians out here, but I wanted people I'd never met before, sort of, again, like what Lindsay did. I wanted to meet new people I didn't know. I was totally open to a girl or a guy. Not one girl answered the ad.
It's weird.
You know, and I was really succinct in the way I wrote the ad. But yeah, these guys came along and it was pretty quick that I found them. And we just, you know, the energy again was really good. You know, it was like brothers.
Yeah, because they're not too shabby themselves.
No, they're amazing. And we've got two Europeans in the band. And we're all so different. We come from different backgrounds, different kind of likes of music, which again, I thought that this is great, you know. And I'm like the annoying sister, you know, always cracking the whip, you know.
No, you're the Lindsay Buckingham of the group going
now. Well, you know, yes and no. They come down on me sometimes when I haven't practiced enough and I keep messing up on a part. They'll be like, you know, you can't do that again. And I'm like, oh shit, it's all coming back to me. You know, the Lindsay gig is all coming back to me. Like, right. I gotta, you know. So no, we, you know, it's really right now, it is now turned into a democracy. It's not me running the band. We have a partnership together, and it's been great. Last year we played at the Grammy Museum. That was amazing.
Right.
And we're working on new stuff, but it's been really tough this year. All of our gigs were canceled. We had some amazing festivals we were going to play. So we've been writing remotely, recording remotely, which is...
It's not the same.
Not fun. And my solo project on hold because I'm working on this blues project, this separate blues. It's going to be part of my solo project, but it's going to be a totally different thing. So I've been just recording and working on that. And
the thing about the string revolution is you all have to be so individually good, but it all has to mesh too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, and so our arrangements take quite a while when we're arranging. Less is more.
You know? Do a cover of Sting's Englishman in New York, and the big drum beat in the middle is played on a guitar.
Yes, that is absolutely played on a guitar. Yeah.
We were debating
whether we should even do that because we're like, well, how are we going to do that to make it sound cool? And we figured it out, you know? So, you know, we love Rodrigo y Gabriela. Those are our, you know, influences. Tommy Emmanuel, who I also opened for once and played with, great guy. I'm sort of in that world now, and I still have a little bit of the singer-songwriter world, and now I'm doing this blues thing.
you're all over the place.
And I'm teaching online a lot, teaching guitar online. I would like to mention that I will be doing a master class on Facebook Live December 18th. You do have to buy a ticket to it. Facebook is now doing a thing where you can pre-sign up, pay for the link, and then you get, on the Facebook Live.
Yes, you too can take lessons from one of the best guitar players in the world.
Yes, you can.
And yes. That's going to be something I should do. I should pay for it.
I put intermediate and above, but it doesn't matter, you know, because if you want to just learn some tips and tricks for future, I'm telling people, you know, go ahead and tape it if you want to record it. And save it, you know, after you've studied some beginner stuff and come back to it.
Some real heavy duty stuff.
I wouldn't say real. I'm not going to go all crazy, but you know, some beginners might appreciate some finger picking technique that I'm going to discuss and show, similar to what Lindsay does, his style of finger picking. And I think that could be for all levels.
Right.
So,
I definitely
a little bit of acoustic, some electric stuff.
And how did your virtual reality concert come out?
You know, it was fine. We did it here. I did it here in the apartment. It happened to me in the summer, so it was fucking hot as hell, you know. And you can't have the air conditioning on because, you know. And it was fine. It just is, you can't see anybody. So, and I'm such a performer. Like, I need to see people. Like I like to see people's eyes and their reactions. And
did you get feedback though afterwards?
Yeah, people liked it, you know. But I think I wasn't happy with myself, you know, so I've refrained from doing that right now. Teaching a lesson is different.
Right.
But, you know, so we'll see. The String Revolution might do one next year, sponsored by a club out here like McCabe's or something like that. Yeah. We might do something like that. Right. And that would be okay. You know, we'd be on stage. We'd have a real sound system, you know.
And I'll support you and support the club, which is good.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I just, you know, it's hard to do these shows at home and nobody's here. And I guess I'm just such a, I don't know. I need a lot of validation, don't I?
Hashtag save our stages. Well, I think I've kissed your ass a lot on this show and I'm going to keep doing it. And I've kept you a half hour longer than scheduled. And I appreciate you bearing with me. We barely scratched the surface.
That's all right.
But is there any way I can get you to play something?
Oh, sure.
Since I asked you on email yesterday and you said yes. Not like I'm putting you on the spot or anything.
Now my voice is totally trashed and I haven't been doing a lot of singing because I've been working all these other projects, but I would like to play an instrumental if that's okay.
I would love that.
Some of my fans and people who know me have seen this song, but I'm going to do it again. And now you get maybe a close-up shot of how I'm doing it whilst using a shaker.
Oh, wow. Right. Okay. I'm going to mute myself, ladies and gentlemen. Okay.
All right. This is called JR Guitar. I mean, I guess I named it after myself. All right. Shaker in hand. Here we go.
Applauded it too quickly, but that was amazing. Thank you.
It's okay. Okay. That's my workout for today.
There you go. Well, that's good. Janet, it's been a pleasure. You actually, I think, are closing in on the longest show I've done, which it was legendary comedian Tom Dreesen, and you are just as good a storyteller as he is.
Oh, I hope so. I hope your audience and your fans weren't bored.
I know I wasn't bored, but please plug away December 18th. If you know some guitar or you are a guitar expert, you're going to learn some new stuff from Janet. And tell everything you got going, lessons,
Yeah, you can. I mean, people can contact me through my website. You know, it's janetrobin.com. If you want to check out the String Revolution, same thing, thestringrevolution.com. We're all on Spotify. String Revolution's doing great on Spotify. Nearly, 3 million streams or something.
That's great.
And yeah, I'm on Facebook, Instagram.
3 million streams, that's probably $20.
Yes, right? It's really sad.
And you're on like every streaming you're on Deezer, you're on other things. I got a free trial of Deezer, so that's why I was
cool. Listening. Yeah.
But, yeah. And janetrobin.com, you got that URL. One question I forgot to ask, sure. Precious Metal, did you have a pseudonym or did you go by Janet Robin?
No, sorry. You know, that's my name. You know, that's my dad's name, Robin, okay. And my grandfather's name.
Okay, great.
Yeah, it changed when they came over from Russia, the great grandfathers.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, it's Robin from here on in, and this has been a delight. And
it was my pleasure. And you know, I wouldn't have talked so long had you not asked interesting questions. So you're part of the team too.
Oh, geez. Oh, be still my heart. Janet, thank you so much. Goth Comedian on all social media. Everybody have a wonderfully creepy week. Bye.
See ya.